Our brain works a lot like a computer in that we're not meant to store a lot of data for short amounts of time in our brain. There's a certain amount of short-term memory, just like a computer, that we have in our brain. Your brain starts to actively move things out of there that it designates that maybe aren't as important, so we forget things.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Cody Lewis is a founding partner of Vendu Capital. He is involved in property acquisition, investor relations, and asset management for the company. Prior to Vendu Capital, Cody worked for leading technology companies such as Apple, Verizon Wireless, CompuCom, and Jamf in management of business-to-business sales and engineering, as well as business accounts executive. After educating himself in the real estate investments and exploring many avenues of investments, he became partner of Vendu Capital to acquire multifamily properties. He produces a podcast, Real Estate Unsuccess Stories, where other investors share stories of unforeseen problems in investing, resolutions, and the lessons learned. Cody, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely, man. Hey, you know, I think it's always fun when you get to interrupt the middle of someone's bio and say, I didn't even read that word before, so tell me how to pronounce that. So that's always a good time. Always a good time. Hey, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on this show. Can you briefly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And quickly, how did you get there?
Yeah, absolutely. So my background came from technology. I've been in B2B sales probably for the better part of 10, 11 years. It was a great experience. It taught me a lot of things. Cut my teeth early with a bunch of, you know, very successful technology companies and had a very fortunate career. I followed that technology path ultimately to a company called Jamf, which actually I became a system engineer, which was a fancy term for the lead technical person on a sales team. And everything was going incredibly well. I had a great job, great people to work with, great family life. And something was missing. My wife and I always talked about we wanted to get in real estate. We looked at different avenues to get in. We kept researching different ways to get in. Her family, on both her mom and her dad's side, have been in real estate all their lives. And we knew that's something we wanted to get into. We looked early on, maybe about after about 5-6 years being married, we looked at actually buying a piece of commercial property. My wife's a real estate attorney. She was named partner at the time of her firm. They were looking to move from their very expensive lease to a new building. So we thought about, well, why don't we buy the office space, rent it back to your company? And listen, I mean, they weren't going out of business. I know my wife, she's incredibly successful. She wasn't going to do that. So we knew we would have a good tenant. We even looked at buying a little bit bigger so we could rent out the other side, that type of thing. And what ultimately happened was they got bought out by a larger law firm. So now she helps run a very, a very large real estate practice at a larger law firm. It's been a great move for her. So she's nothing but happy and successful over there, but that killed our real estate dreams right then and there. Now I can't swing a hammer or hit a nail. So we knew like fix and flips and single family wasn't probably going to be our thing. So I have this good friend of mine from high school. We've known each other for 20 plus years now, longer than I probably like to admit. And he has been passively investing in multifamily real estate for the better part of 4 years now, co-GP'd a deal. And kind of during this time period, it was interesting how it matched up. We had this thing that we were thinking about doing with real estate, and it turns out he was already doing some of it. Fast forward to 2020, he wanted to get away from the LP side of investing in multifamily real estate into the GP side, asked if we wanted to join him from a partnership, and we jumped at the chance. And that was at the end of 2020. We spun it up right then. We hired a mentor. We invested heavily in what, you know, learning and what we needed to do to get up and running. And then in June of 2021, I left my W-2 job. So we're still working in real estate, but now it's full time. He spun down his construction company. I quit my W-2 job in June. And so we are both now full-fledged, full-time into multifamily real estate.
That's really cool. And you guys are, and I love having people who are in the trenches building their business come on this show, because you'll remember things, or you'll know things right now that maybe 5 years from now, once your business is built, that you probably would forget. Because the nitty gritty of the moment is, it's just very, very clear and present. So tell me some of the challenges maybe that you guys are facing right now as you're scaling this up. You know, you exited your W-2, you guys are still looking to take down your first deal, but what are some things right now that you guys are working through that are not clogging the pipe, but maybe just things that you're really are obstacles for you at the moment that you're overcoming?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're a two-person shop. So a lot of the stuff that we face on a daily basis, it is going to be time. Mm. There are two of us and we've split the responsibilities. That was something we did after I quit my W-2. We probably should have done that a little earlier. So we got on our whiteboard the first day that my first day as an official real estate person full-time, we got on our whiteboard and I said, you know, we're just going to spend as much time as we need today going over roles and responsibilities. And we split those up and he has mostly the kind of asset management broker relation stuff. And I'm investor relations and marketing. And what's been great is we help each other out in those areas, but we split it. So he is fully in control of those broker relations. I trust him with everything he's doing. He's got the construction background, so I know he knows what he's doing. He takes that. I take all the investor relations, all the marketing stuff, and we collaborate on it, but we split it. But it's still with just two people, it's a lot. And I know we've talked before, just I know off kind of camera, if you will, the idea of just hosting podcasts and booking guests and processing the audio, even if you have an editor, posting it to social media, confirming your guests, making sure they're getting all the right sources and material. It's a lot. That could be a full-time job in and of itself. And then layer on top of it, you got to do the marketing for possible investors and looking for that, understanding where your investors are, how to find them, that sort of thing. So I think the biggest thing for us outside of deal flow, right? So that's always a challenge. We always want to find a little bit more of that is going to be the idea of time and how do we optimize and save the most amount of time and be the most efficient. And so for me, those are the things that keep me up at night when I'm thinking about these types of things is how do I get more efficient with the things that are kind of daily tasks that I need to do so that I can be in front of more investors, that I can be in front of more meetups, that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. And it's especially those repetitive tasks, you know, the things that really tend to kill. So finding what those are and finding a way to offload off of your plate is actually a harder process, I think, than most people give credit for. So what are some things right now that, I mean, are you tracking repetitive tasks or tasks and trying to figure out how to offload those or what's that process look like?
Yeah. So I think for me right now, I'm probably not tracking them as much as I probably need to. I know the ones that are the most time consuming and those are the ones that are most present in my mind. So for example, like the podcast we were talking about, everything that goes into the podcast, even though we've offloaded the editing to a fantastic editor, there's still a lot that goes into it. Finding the guest, confirming the guest, all those kind of things that have to happen before you hit record and then after you hit record. So one of the things that helped me was I found some different applications, task managers, whatever you may have, that allow me to kind of move the process of that person in my podcast along a path so I can open up my task manager and see where everyone is in my process. So I've booked them as a guest, then I move them to a next one. And we use some things like, so on the back end, we used Calendly for booking our guests and managing some of those invitations. We use ActiveCampaign and we've integrated some of that with Calendly so that our guests are now going to start getting emails directly related from there. So automating as much of that stuff as we can. But what I forgot working for large organizations is you got to build those automations. So, and they're going to take longer than you think. And if you're like me, you want them to look and feel good. So you don't want to just put something out there. You know, it's your brand, it's your image.
Right.
So like yesterday, I wanted to update our newsletter. And, you know, ActiveCampaign has a great little tool that you can do that in. I dedicated an hour and a half for that. It ended up taking me 4 hours to really work through that. And it's just the intricacies of understanding the software and how it works, but making it look good. So though understanding that I may not be tracking it, but I'm very cognizant of what's taking the most amount of my time and where should I maybe be putting my time instead of that.
Yeah. And people overlook that especially when you're in a rush or it's last second, the amount of time it takes to develop an automation. And then making it work, like even if you build it, you know, we talked about this offline inside of, you know, email deliverability inside of ActiveCampaign. It doesn't matter what your domain authority is. It doesn't matter what some of these things are. There's just certain, for whatever reason, getting those delivered can be a real challenge. So you build all this stuff and you go, well, crud. Well, now it's still not working. So now you got to find a workaround right to it. And so sometimes, yeah, tech is interesting in that regard, in that when it works, it's amazing. And can be, you know, like it'll buy your time back in ways you can't imagine. But when it fails, you go, oh, crud. Like now we got a right kink in the system. So setting it up right on the front end, like you're saying, is one of those things that, yeah, it takes 4 hours to do. But once it's done, it should look really good. And hopefully we'll work as planned.
Right. And that's the goal. And I think one of the things that I started to move to that I had done before then I'd forgotten about, and it kind of came up in one of the podcasts I listened to, and it was a good reminder, was block scheduling. So the idea of I'm going to put blocks on my calendar where I'm going to be focused on one specific task. So for that hour, hour and a half, 2 hour, whatever the block is, I do not open any other application. I don't take phone calls unless they're from very important people, that I'm only working on that task. And so I can solely focus, because if you're like me, my mind darts all over the place when I'm like, oh, well, you know what? This email just came in from this possible investor. I need to make sure that my automation fired off, and did they do this thing right? And so all those things creep into my head. Whereas right now, what I'm working on is how do I limit those distractions and solely focus on what I need to do? So that might be looking for new opportunities to find investors. So we go to a lot of meetups in the area. So where am I finding those? How am I scheduling those? Where do I need to be? Is it me going? Do I need to send my partner based on the crowd that's going to be there? You know, we both have our strengths and weaknesses of who we like to talk to and can kind of elaborate with. So I'm really trying to focus on a lot of that stuff, but also using some of my tech background to automate a lot of my processes. You know, something I know I've talked about a lot, but just the podcast, like I have a little tool that I invested in called a Stream Deck. It's a little LCD panel, but I programmed it where I can push one button and all my applications other than what I absolutely need for my podcast close. And then they open the other applications and all my stuff is just there. So I don't have to worry about distractions or anything. It literally with one button sets up my entire podcasting experience. And it's fantastic. It saves me 30 to 45 seconds each day, but it's that little thing that I don't have to think or worry about that in my mind. It's there. I hit the button and I'm good to go.
Yeah. And that's funny. I mean, I don't know if there's a way to quantify this, but the mental baggage that you produce when you are doing things like, oh, wait, I got to open Zoom. And oh, wait, I got to make sure that I've got this document up and that document up and make sure all this stuff is in the right place so that when you go to launch your whatever it is, in this case, it's podcasting. When you go to launch that, you go, okay, now it's all right. But if you could do that with a button, and again, it's not even necessarily time savings, I wouldn't think. It's that lack of needing to plan. Because that's where mental fatigue comes in, and that translates across to finding deals. It really is the base of this is just setting up systems that work, you know, for you as you grow. But setting those up again, it takes time. It takes time to get a Stream Deck together, to program those buttons, to figure out how they work. And you're like, gosh, I'm gonna spend an hour and a half programming this. But yeah, but what sort of mental fatigue are you not incurring every single day you're recording? Quite a bit.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. You know, for those that maybe have read the GTD book, I haven't read it in a while, and it's something I definitely want to go back and reread. But I know that there's a concept in there that our brain works a lot like a computer, in that we're not meant to store a lot of data for short amounts of time in our brain. That's why oftentimes there's a certain amount of short-term memory, just like a computer, that we have in our brain. And what happens is as you pack that more and more and more, think your brain starts to actively move things out of there that it designates that maybe aren't as important. So we forget things. So the idea of just getting things out of your head and on paper or in some sort of application, just get them out of your head and then process that later, creates the idea that you don't have to have that mental fatigue of keeping up and keeping track of all that stuff inside your head. People think I'm a little crazy. Just for my personal stuff, between my wife and I, we have 7 calendars that I manage. 7. Yeah. I'm a little weird, I know, but it's incredibly helpful because at any given time, I can see exactly what's going on with our kids, you know, her work schedule, or at least things that are very important where I need to be aware of, things that she knows that I can't break. So I put some of my meetings in there, and that's separate than my work calendar. So it's incredibly helpful. Now, some of them are also college football calendars because I got to be in front of the TV on Saturday to make sure I'm cheering them on. But we have a bunch of calendars, and that's just one of those things that the moment something pops up that needs to be on the calendar, we just drop it in there, and we're both pretty good about it. We just put it in there and we don't have to think about it. Right. It's there.
Right. Yeah. I love that. I don't want to think about it. And that's, it's funny. Again, I know we're kind of honing in on something, but I want to transition gears here, but reducing the number of things during the day you have to think about, I think, is one of the things that is, it's been instrumental in my own life in growing, in scaling, like reducing the number of, and this goes all the way down to, when I got married, I had to tell my wife, like, I'm not that smart to keep track of where we put the keys. Right? Like when the keys come in the house, and this is going to sound really neurotic, people are like, sounds weird, man. But literally there's 4 hooks and there are 3 cars, right? One's an RV and there's 2 cars. They always go in the same order on the hook. And then the last hook always has a set of keys that are like rarely used keys. And that way I always know with a glance, it's like when you walk in the door, they get hooked on the same hook every single time. And I said, babe, it's not because I'm crazy. It's because I don't have the space in my head to remember if I left my keys in my pocket. It's like, I'm going to be disciplined about where I hang these every time. I right. never have to think about it. Like the keys then are all there.
Yep. Your brain never has to process and think about or use any processing time to mm-hmm. think about where are the keys? Where did I put them?
Right. I leave those in my pants and I wear jeans yesterday or wear dress pants and I hang them up accidentally. It's like, no, I'm neurotic, man. In the front door, keys come out of your pocket. They go on the hook.
Yep.
It's just what you do. So I love that idea of reducing the number of things you guys think about just in order to grow and really make your brain available for the tasks that are important.
Well, I was going to say, you know, in the idea of scaling, the one thing I keep thinking about too is all these things that we're doing, we know that we're going to grow. We're going to get more deals up under our belt and we will eventually grow the team. So one of the things that we keep thinking about and talking about is what are the things that we're doing on a daily basis that will then be offloaded to somebody else we bring on board? And are those processes good enough that we can offload them to somebody else? And it's not just in our brains, this is how we do it, but there's an actual process behind it that anybody or everyone could see and follow, or that we could even teach out to somebody when we bring them on board. One of the things we talk about very often is what's the role that we would want to hire first? Who's the person or what role would they need to fill on our team? And we kind of wax and wane a little bit on that because we don't have to make a decision now, but we have often discussions a lot of times like over lunch or coffee or something like that, where it's like, okay, when this happens, what's the first role we need to fill? And oftentimes it comes down to what's our weakest point, you know, from our standpoint of what we don't do well, and who could we hire to fill that and make it even better?
Right. Yeah. And I guess between the two of you, what's the position? Is there a title? Is there what's the answer to that?
Probably marketing. Okay. Neither one of us are exceptional at that. I think I do an okay job. I know I'm not the best. There's always stuff you can be doing more from a marketing standpoint. And I think it does take somebody that not only understands that and understands marketing from a social media platform, a posting things, but also just the dedication you have to be constant in those things. Those are those daily tasks that you have to be constant. You have to be active on certain message boards. You have to be active on social media. You have to be active with all the things that you're doing. And if we could have somebody that not only understands all of that, but is also able to be active, and that's their primary role, that would be ideal.
Right.
Because again, my background, like I mentioned early on, was in sales. So I have a little bit of that, but most of the time those companies had a marketing department. So they were doing a lot of that for me. Mine was more kind of micro marketing of just like networking and getting to know the different people in these companies I was selling to, where now I have to do the marketing for the entire company. Mm-hmm. So being able to offload that, I think, would be pretty vital.
Yeah. And that's a great point. That's a great point that I think a lot of people don't consider when they jump in. Like you said, suddenly you're doing all the marketing, you're doing all the, you know, content creation, you're doing all of the thinking through how to, and even if you get the content created, then getting it posted and reused in a meaningful way, and then interacting with people if they interact with the content you post. Holy smokes. Yeah, that's a full-time job. So I like that. I like that idea that marketing, because we are in this business, as we scale, there's two things we need, deals and money. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that we find both is through actively putting ourselves out there, especially in today's environment, you know, on all the social media platforms and saying, hey, this is who we are and this is what we do. Engage with us.
Right. So, well, and we're very strategic where we post and where we try to be. And I'm very cognizant of our image and brand. That's how I was trained and brought up through the organizations I worked for.
Right.
Brand and image was very important. So we want to make sure that everything that we do, whether it's a blog post, a social media post, a podcast, a forum post, that everything is of what we believe in at our core principles and what's going to make sure that we're putting our best foot forward.
Man, I love that. I love that. Cody, before we jump here into the final four questions, I just want to say I've enjoyed this conversation because we kind of went down some rabbit holes that, you know, we don't typically get to talk about, which is really kind of some of the time management practices, the thinking about how to scale, you know, talking about maybe who your first hire would be as you guys kind of you know, bat that idea around. I think those are all fun things in the, I call it fun, but they're all things in the beginning that as we gear and kind of work, get the gears moving in our head through this process that takes some time to kind of to tease out and go, what's this look like as we grow? And I think you've given us some good things to think about on that front. And, you know, not to mention in the least bit, the, you know, partnering up from the beginning and even having a partner, how you guys are short on time. So I think all of those things have been absolutely awesome. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners that you guys are really thinking about right now? Maybe obstacles or maybe things you feel like you're doing right that are helping you guys move forward in a meaningful way?
I think one of the things that maybe we did early on, and our mentor definitely helped us with this, and I think there's a lot of debate in the community about this on which way to go. We focused on getting soft commitments from investors first. We did not search for deals first. We didn't reach out to brokers to build those relationships. We focused on who are going to help us grow this business, who are going to be our potential investors. We made a list. We reached out to those individuals because they were former colleagues, peers, friends, family, those types of things, kind of your first 2 to 3 immediate circles, if you will, and a few referrals on top of that. And it was focusing solely on that. We took a month and a half, just focusing on that. And that gave us the peace of mind when you talk about kind of that mental capacity, not having to think about what kind of money are we going to be able to bring. Now, granted, it's soft commitments. We know we're only going to count about 50 to 60% of that based on things that we hear in the community. But even at that number, we kind of know where we are at, right? And if it's anything better than that, great. We'll continue to grow and find more investors. But for us, that gave us that peace of mind that we can feel confident with our mentor helping us and working with him a ton. But also we have those soft commitments in our back pocket that we don't have to think about that as we're going and finding deals. As my partner's talking with brokers, he doesn't have to worry about, are we going to have enough capital to buy this property? Because it's all about, can you close a deal? And we didn't want capital to be that problem. So I know that that's a long, long debate, I think, with a lot of people. But for us, that made the most sense on getting that done early and first.
No, I think that's great. And that's one of the problems that I think every aspiring investor runs into is the lack of capital. So, you know, again, not to, I'll throw my hat in the ring in debate, I guess, and say that I think you're doing it the right way. I mean, because without capital, you can't confidently put out LOIs. You can't, I mean, what are you going to do? You're kind of risking a lot by not doing that. And everybody I've spoken with, of course you have too on your show, has probably said the same thing. Like one of the things they wish they had focused on earlier was the capital raise side. I've heard that man, many, 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 many times. Like that's where we should have started sooner.
That, or I hear, man, I thought I could have raised a lot more capital than we did. Right. I get a lot of that on the show. You know, I thought I could raise, you know, I thought I was going to be able to raise 2 million and we raised like 800,000. Hey, I mean, 800,000 is nothing to scoff at, but when you're thinking you're going to raise 2 million and then you come in, you know, well short, you know, 40, 45%.
Yeah.
You know, that's a tougher pill to swallow. So for us, it made a lot of sense that we wanted to start and see where we were going to possibly land and then go from there. We had a pretty good idea, but that was for us where we wanted to focus.
Right, right. Man, I love that. Cody, let's jump here into the final four. Here we go. First question is this. If I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
Hire a mentor immediately. For us, the time value to money that we talk about, I mean, I thought about this a lot, you know, listening to the show and stuff like that. And there's some opportunities, you know, locally that we could go, maybe some short, you know, buying some single family or some smaller multifamily stuff and looking at that. But for me, and I think the best place you can oftentimes spend money, if you're, especially for us getting into this right now, hiring a mentor immediately. It propelled us much faster than what we probably could have done on our own and you know, using YouTube University and Bigger Pockets and stuff like that. And we still use those. Don't get me wrong. We're on there. We love it. I'm, you know, probably 3 or 4 YouTube videos this morning already. But the idea that we have someone in our back pocket, we can call, we can reach out to. They gave us courses and material that we could follow and educated us on the stuff that they did and they saw others be successful. 100%, hands down, get a mentor.
Love it. That's great. Question number 2 is this. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Don't think you can do it all on your own. Find a good partner if you are needing such. This is not a single person business. There are very few, especially in the multifamily space that I've seen that are doing this, rolling this on their own, whether it's a spouse or somebody like myself. You know, I happen to have a good friend of mine that wanted to get into it as well. Partner up. whether it's a joint venture, an actual partnership, whatever, find somebody that's good at what you're not and work through that together.
Love it. Question number three, when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
You know, I think right now for us, I don't know if we're doing anything active that we do, but I will say this, the what we've talked about a bunch, as we move forward, one thing that we are going to do is find three charities, each of us, that we're going to be heavily investing in. And that's near and dear to our heart. And we have a couple of different causes that are that we will be working with. So we each have our own three charities, and not only will we be donating money, but actually time. That's something I think that's also very valuable. And one of the reasons why we got into this business is being entrepreneurs, we have the benefit of being able to make our own schedule. So there's not an excuse for us to say that, hey, I can stroke a check and just feel good about it. We actually want to go give time and effort into it as well.
Right. Yeah, man, that's absolutely great. Cody, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks again for having us on. VenduCapital.com is going to be the best place to find us. We have our blog on there. You have our contact information on there, and even feeds directly to our podcast, The Real Estate Unsuccess Stories.
That's awesome. And for those of you who are listening, Vendu is spelled V-E-N-D-U-E. Again, that's V as in Victor, E-N-D-U-E, capital.com. Cody, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Hey, Sam. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.